My name is Bill Colburn, and I work for Ave Maria University. I was a professor for a number of years over at the University of Michigan, and then I did some work at the University of Connecticut, and I retired. And unfortunately, on one occasion, I bumped into Tom Monahan, and now I'm out of retirement, and I'm working probably as hard as I've ever worked in my life, but I want you to know that it's one of the most satisfying jobs that I've ever had in my life, and I'm so grateful that Tom asked both me and my wife, Colette, who's here in the audience, to be with him on this wonderful, wonderful project that we have, Ave Maria University. So we're very grateful to Tom for the opportunity that he has extended to us. I'd like to, at this time, introduce the chaplain for our conference. He's a graduate of an independent Catholic school, Colby Academy, in Napa Valley, California. He's son of the Colby founders, Fran and Margaret Crotty. And he was ordained in 2001, Father, it says here, and is a member of the Fathers of Mercy. And he's currently conducting parish missions in that particular organization. So for our opening prayer, Father, would you lead us?
Today we celebrate, of course, the great solemnity of the Sacred Heart. He who nurtures us, the Good Shepherd, He who offers His heart to each one of us. The Sacred Heart is certainly one of the highest solemnities in our own order. Our founder, Father Jean-Baptiste Rozon, had a great love for the Sacred Heart. But it is the Sacred Heart, this devotion which we so dearly need in this world today. Because what is the scriptural expression, though that we may have hearts of stone, may that they become fleshy hearts, like that of our Lord. And so this is really what the intent of the conference is, to bring the heart of our Lord Jesus Christ, the Sacred Heart, to the youth, to the children of the world, that they may be truly one with Christ. And so in order to prepare ourselves for this conference, let us place ourselves under the holy patronage of the Sacred Heart by praying very simply, Our Father who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. And to open, I will give you all blessing. The Lord be with you. May Almighty God bless you, the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit.
Amen. Thank you, Father. You know, I get a kick out of people talking about our most important natural resource in the United States and in America. And they talk about things like oil and water, things like that. And we all know that the most important resource that we have in America is our children. And I want you all to know that I am so grateful to all of you for understanding that fact, and doing what you are doing to make sure that in the future that our country can remain strong, can remain spiritual, and can be focused as we know that our country should be focused. And again, to all of you, thank you very, very much for doing what you do. You know, one of the things that is very difficult for speakers, and in this case, as all of you already know, because you've looked at the program, we have two of the truly great speakers that we might have to lead any conference in the United States. We have Patrick Riley here, and you all know about his outstanding credentials. And, of course, we have Tom Monahan here, who is sought after as a conference speaker all over the world. But, as a matter of fact, I'm probably going to make both of them feel a little bit bad at this point, to let them know that the most important people in this room really doesn't turn out to be Patrick or Tom. The most important people in this room turn out to be all of you. You're our guests. And so one of the things that's very difficult if you're in Patrick's situation or Tom's situation is that we'd like to know a little bit, as speakers, When I speak, you'd like to know a little bit more about the most important people in the room, your audience. So at this point, I'm going to go over some information about all of you. Years you've been open, 50% of you, 1 to 5 years, 13%, 6 to 10 years, 5%, 10 to 20 years, 7%, 20 years plus, and 25% of you here tonight, that's about 20 of you, are planning to start a school. Grades that you're offering, 2% are offering K through 6, 27% K through 8, 51% are K through 12. Okay? How many are you educating? 32% say you have from 0 to 25 kids. 39% say 25 to 50 children. 7% say 50 to 75. 10% say 75 students to 100 students. 9% say 100 to 150. 2% 150 to 175. 2% 175 to 200. And 2% have over 200 students in their school. Right? Estimated total of the number of students being educated by all of those individuals collected here, over 2,000. But your goals are to educate over 5,000, almost 6,000 students in the years ahead. And we'll all pray that that, in fact, does happen. The average first child tuition is $3,400. The average first year teacher is paid, is this right? This might be a typo. I don't know. It's $2,100? That can't be right. $21,000. Left a zero off. Yeah, right. That was a principal speaking over here on this side. On the average, 6 staff members work at your school, and your school administrator, a full-time teacher, 24% of you. A part-time teacher, 29% of you. A full-time principal, 16% of you. A volunteer, 32%. Isn't that interesting? Now, I want to just find out a couple of other things about you, and this will be helpful to our speakers as they're getting a better feel for all of you. Those of you attending your very first independent school in service conference, would you please stand? Those for the very first time here. Holy cow. Give them a round of applause. Let's go the other way. Those of you who've attended all five of the conferences, all five, is there anyone? All right. Those of you thinking about starting a school, please stand. Thinking about, okay. You're going to do it, okay. Well, now, the rest of you, I want you to stand up again. All of you thinking about starting, stand up again. The rest of you, I want you to take a good look at these individuals, and I want you to help them tonight at the reception. Go up and talk to them. Okay. Okay. Drink, drink. Okay. Now we're ready for the speakers for this evening, and I hope Tom and Patrick, you have a better feel for this group that you're dealing with tonight. And our first speaker is a man that I have mentioned to you already, Tom Monahan. I've known Tom a long time. I have the greatest respect for Tom. We've joked about a couple of things. Tom's daughter was a cheerleader on my son and Tom's daughter were in the same class at Gabriel Richard High School, and his daughter was a cheerleader on my son's basketball team. And so we go back a long way. In fact, I used to stand in over there at Gabriel Richard. We used to have to go as parents and pick up our children's report cards. The kids didn't bring them home. You had to go and get them. And I can remember many times standing with Marge in line waiting to get our kids' report cards, chatting about, I wonder what we've got this time, you know, that kind of the apprehension that runs through parents as you you wait for your children's grades. But I have known Tom for a long time, and I wanted to just say to you that the other day Colette and I were over at Domino's Farms, which is just a tremendous office facility. In fact, yesterday they had groundbreaking for another addition, the final addition to Domino's Farms. And when that addition is completed, and I want you to listen to this, That office space will have over 1 million square feet of office space. It has the longest copper roof of any building, I think, in the world. Is that right? It's something, the longest copper roof in the world. If you haven't had a chance to go over and see the building, it's spectacular. Some of the finest office space that you will ever see. Well, as you go to Domino's Farms, and you go up to the foundation, you go up toward that, there's a little blue Volkswagen parked in front of Domino's International. And so I was up there the other day, and I stopped, and there was a sign in front of this little car. And it said something like, and I don't remember exactly, it said, this little Volkswagen, this little car, may have changed the face of fast food delivery. And that was a car just like Tom. I don't think that was the exact car. It was a replica of the car that Tom had. So, ladies and gentlemen, you are now going to hear from a person who's one of the most influential Catholics in the United States, in the world, one of the most influential business people in the world. As you know, a major sports figure, used to own the Detroit Tigers. He has an office building which provides the finest kind of office space that you can find any place, 1 million square feet of it, and it all started with this little blue Volkswagen. Now, I hope that all of you can find real and true inspiration in that statement, because all of you have your little blue Volkswagens, and you're working away, and the Lord only knows what you're going to accomplish. Your product may not be square feet. It may not be a baseball team. But it may be something that even surpasses all of that. It may be a youngster who goes off and creates and leads and really puts together a situation that takes our society forward and leads our culture in the right direction. And that, ladies and gentlemen, is in your hands. Well, with that, not to minimize what Tom has accomplished, because what he has accomplished is tremendous. I want you all to give him a true warm welcome. Ladies and gentlemen, Tom Monahan.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. How are you doing, John? Well, that was a nice introduction, Bill. In order to get Colette, we had to take Bill. I don't know how this is going to come out. I never do when I get up and talk. I have notes here, but I usually don't refer to them that much. I can't really read them anyhow. And I don't like reading speeches, so it's a crapshoot anytime you listen to me talk. If I'm talking about history of Domino's, I can in my life story, I can do that in my sleep. But I've told that so many times, I don't tell it anymore unless I absolutely have to. Another situation is I hadn't had much to eat today, and I came over to the president's house for the reception, and I had a glass of wine on an empty stomach. So that's really going to add to the drama here tonight. But seriously, I'm truly privileged to be here. This is the third year I've been here to speak to you. And to me, you're really special heroes. And I really mean it, because I have some idea what you're going through. You're giving up your time, your money to start these schools, and you're not doing it for yourself. You're doing it for the same reason that I'm doing it, and that's to help these kids learn the faith so they can go to heaven and lead a lot of other people there. Because as someone said, the only catastrophe we have in life is losing our souls. And we all know that's true, but we kind of forget about it. But that's what we're all about. And that's what I hope my purpose and the rest of my life will be about. And I think the best way to do that is Catholic education. And it's something that we, the laity, are going to have to do. I don't think it should be that way, but that's the way it is. it would be a lot easier for our parishes and our dioceses to operate Catholic schools. Most of them already have buildings that are just sitting there. You have to go out and find a building or build a building. They're already there. Or they can use their, if they didn't have a school there before, they have a lot of classrooms that they just used on weekends for media, for CCD and things like that. They could start up schools. Now, we have one parish north of here. It's one of those great priests that wish they'd all be that way, Father Thomas at Holy Spirit. He started, he had no money. He started out of school. I think they had about six kids, but he started. You know, that's an entrepreneur. He's we need more priests like that. And the parishes have the benefit of having the Sunday collections, so the schools get subsidized. The private schools have a big disadvantage there. And they have the power of the pulpit. They can get up there and promote from the pulpit their schools. You don't have that. But hopefully you can show the way by operating schools where kids learn the faith. Now, I've met a lot of people that have went to Catholic schools their whole life, or they've been involved in Catholic schools, and I'm talking the typical Catholic schools, and they really think that their kids are getting a good education, a good Catholic education. The kids that went there think that they got a good Catholic education. I think even the people, I'll give them the benefit of the doubt, that are running these schools, and the teachers think that the kids are getting a good education. But, you know, they don't have a clue. They don't know what they don't know. They don't know what a good education is. And I see our schools here with Spirit of Santus, and the parents say, I didn't know a school could be there as good. I didn't know where there were schools like that. And there's people that move from other parts of the country just so they can send their kids to that school. Now, those are smart parents because they know what's important. And the other thing that you can do is you can show these pastors and these dioceses that how cheap a school can run. You don't need all the frills and all the things. You can do it with cement floors, and they can sit on crates for that matter. But it's important what they learn. And I gave the last 2 years I talked about entrepreneurship. And I think I'm speaking to the choir. Now, I've won a lot of awards for entrepreneurship. I think for the 80s, I was named the entrepreneur of the decade of the 80s. That was a long time ago, and I forgot everything I've learned. I haven't learned anything new. But you are the entrepreneurs. And my definition of an entrepreneur is that, and I said this last year and the year before, one is you got to fill a need. And you got to have the vision to see that need. A lot of people don't see the vision. They don't see the potential of these Catholic schools and what they can do and how important they are. So first you got to see that vision and set up a plan to fill that need. Two, you've got to be willing to start small. This college here, this was an abandoned elementary school, not in the best part of town. Things were pretty run down around here. And I don't know how many full-time students we had the first year. I think it was 6 years ago, 5 years ago. It was something like, I think it was about 10 or 12. And that's questionable because we were taking anybody and everybody who could get off the street and almost had to pay them to come. But we got started. That's the point. We got started. And we had some of our employees over at Domino's Farms in the foundation take classes in our cafeteria just so we get the numbers up. They came over and gave a class in theology and one in philosophy once a week. I took one of the classes in philosophy just to help get the numbers up so that we could say we had 25 or so students that first year. We didn't talk about full-time equivalent. We weren't that sophisticated. But you got to get started. And I remember we wanted to hire a president that had somewhat of a national reputation and an Orthodox Catholic scholar, and he came in here and he looked at this campus, and it looks a lot better now than it did then. And he said, "You don't have a campus." And that's the last time we saw him. See, he had no vision. He didn't see the potential. And this was only meant to be a temporary location. We were going to build a beautiful, state-of-the-art campus at Domino's Farms, but we have a little township there that had different ideas. And it's one of those no-growth townships, a little tiny township with 2,500 homes in it. And Domino's Farms is by far the biggest taxpayer in the township. And sometimes when you're the biggest, you're a target. And, of course, Ann Arbor is the People's Republic of Ann Arbor. And I'm not known as a bleeding liberal by any stretch of the imagination, neither religiously nor politically. So they just dug in their heels, and no matter what we've done, we've had a battle about 5 or 6 years, we lost. Now, maybe we could have pursued it through the courts and won, but finally we decided that this may not be the best place in the country to have a Catholic university anyhow, and so we decided to move it to Naples, Florida. I figure as long as we're going to be spending all this money and I'm going to blow everything I have, I might as well be in the best possible location. And I know the map of the United States about as well as anybody. I always had one on my desk. I was figuring out where to put stores, where to put the supervisors, where to put the commissaries, where to put the regional offices. And I knew demographics because I had to learn the populations of every campus in the United States, male and female, because men eat about four times as much pizza as women in the dorms, and how many kids in each dorm, and I knew those numbers of the statistics of the town. So I know the map of the United States pretty well. And I don't need a marketing study. I've been doing that for years. The best place, I believe, to open up to operate a Catholic university, a fine Catholic university in the United States, is Naples, Florida. For a lot of reasons. One of them, it has great weather. It's if you want to spend a week or two in Florida, if you want to be sure of the weather, the place to go is Naples. And I've been all over Florida, and I've seen snow in Key Biscayne. Now, just little flakes, but snow. And I've been to spring training in Lakeland when I had the Tigers every year for 9 years, and it got pretty darn cold there. And it gets pretty cold in Tampa and Clearwater and Orlando. And Palm Springs, but Naples seems to have a certain jet stream that just has what has been known to be the second best weather in the United States, next to San Diego. Well, and that is the reason Naples is what it is. First time I went down there, they had about 12,000 people. Now they're close to 300,000. It's the second fastest growing community in the United States. And if the environmentalists would let them, it'd be the fastest growing in the United States. And because of that growth, it's got, they say, the first, second, or third, for depending on who you're listening to, highest average net worth per resident of any city or community in the United States. So a lot of good reasons to go to Naples. I think it'd be the easiest place in the country to recruit students to, from all over the country. We want to be a national and an international school. I think it'd be the easiest place in the country to raise money, and we're going to have to raise a lot of money. And the building costs are a lot cheaper. They only have unions down there. I'm from Michigan. My gosh, I didn't know there was any other way. And the governmental bodies. I mean, I went to see the commissioners at they have five county commissioners that run the county, and they handle all the rezoning petitions. They were all Republicans. I couldn't believe it. And the chairman was a strong, active Catholic. And at least three of the other four were wearing. I don't know about the fifth one. That person might be Catholic, too. If he's not, he's intimidated. And so what a difference in environment. And here you got a newspaper that's liberal as they come. Down there, the paper is doing beautiful editorials on this. I'm not used to this. What a difference. And then we've opened up our temporary campus down there, and we already have over 100 volunteers that come in. And we've set up Mass with Father Fessio, and we get about 80 people a day coming to Mass. And we just started doing that, and that's before we had students there. So I think that township did us a favor by turning this down. And I put in Our Lady's hands just a month or two before, because this was my number one priority probably for the last 5 years is to get zoning, because you we have this vision of building this great university, but if you don't have a place to do it, you can't do it. We're a temporary location here for the college, temporary location in Ann Arbor for the law school, and you know, that's a tough way to go. But Our Lady, I think, gave us a good answer. So that's where we're going. My wife is not totally sold on it yet. So first thing they asked me, am I moving down there? I said, well, I'm going to live where my wife lives. They ask her. I think it's important to start small. I think it's, and now we're not so small. This campus will have about 300 students next fall. We had 229 last year. Plus, we're going to have about 100 down in Florida at the interim campus there. We have about 450 in Nicaragua, which is we've been operating that for about 4 years. IPT, that's International Pastoral Theology. I try to get them to change the name, and they never do it because I never remember it. IPT. They have about 150 students in masters in pastoral theology, and that's done in off-site in various dioceses around the country. And then the law school has about 200 students last year. They'll probably have about 240 or so next year, and they had 160 LSAT, which would make it the fifth highest Catholic law school in the United States last year. And they did that without accreditation. Now they have accreditation. And to do that, and that means we're getting students that can get into the very best schools in the country, and with those high scores, they always get scholarships. And yet we were able to have that kind of a result with our student profile. And that's because of the kind of school we are, because it's thoroughly and completely Catholic, just like your schools. And a law school like that does not exist anywhere. And but the third thing I mentioned last year about entrepreneurship is to never quit. Never quit. I was in business 20 years before I was what you would call a success. Just up and down, up and down, up and down. And it took 20 years. But of course, it paid off. And you never know when it's going to pay off because you're always building momentum, but you don't know when it's going to kick in. And you might go along struggling with your schools, and all of a sudden you get a whole slew of students coming in, six families at once, 22 kids. or somebody might come in with a big check out of the blue. You never know. But it's not going to happen if you're closed, if you give up. So never, ever, ever give up. Pray, but don't give up. And I had some other thoughts that I didn't mention last year, and one of them is, as mentioned briefly, is marketing. And that's very important in your schools. And I don't know if anybody's talking about marketing or not. It's something I beat on all the time with our people. It's very important that people know you're there. It doesn't matter, it doesn't make any difference how good you are if they don't know you're there. You got to be beating the drums in every way you can, and don't be even bashful about that. When Domino's was a young company, we got to be a pretty good size at one point, maybe 300, 400, 500 stores, but we were scattered all over the country because I did everything the dumb way. I went to, instead of growing this way in the concentric circles, I just went to all the college campuses around the country and all the military bases. So I wasn't really known as a national company. Because I wasn't big anywhere. I was scattered all over and didn't really go to the big cities because that's not where you have a lot of dorms on our military bases. So I couldn't afford national advertising. So what I had to do is do public relations. I had to find ways to get our name in the paper. And so that means sometimes doing things with a little flair and trying to figure out the things that you're doing that are doing different and get it to the media somehow. Find some way to do that. I didn't care what they said about me as long as they spelled Domino's right. But they've got to know you're there. You can be very creative about that. And a lot of stuff is free. Get on your local radio stations. A lot of people, when they think of public relations, they think of sending something to the newspaper. I think I got more results sending stuff to radio stations because they don't, the people don't think about sending stuff to the radio stations. I don't know how many times people say, oh, I heard this or that, and I heard it on the radio station. They play that stuff. And so there's anything that you're doing that's unique and that you think is newsworthy, try to find a way to get it to some of the local media. Now, we have a survey that we do at Ave Maria because I'm trying to establish another name. I spent my career trying to establish the name Domino's. And I can remember years ago I belonged to a local president's group that met monthly. And at that time, I had about 30 or 40 stores scattered pretty much around the eastern part of the country. And each one of us was talking about what our long-term vision was. And it was impromptu. And I said, well, mine is I want Domino's to be a household word throughout the United States. And they really audibly snickered at that. They said, what? You can't a household word? I said, how are you going to do that? I says, I don't know. I'll figure it out. But I'm just determined I'm going to do it. I'm growing, and I'm going to keep 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 plowing back and plowing back until I got the country covered. Well, when you're starting your little schools, have that kind of confidence that it's going to get there. In the area of development, you've got people talking about development, and that's an area I'm just learning about. That's the third thing in my life I want to be good at. The first one was the pizza business. Second was franchising, and now it's going to have to be development because I'm seeing how much all this stuff costs. One thing that's working real well for us, I don't know if you heard about it. Anybody here a founder in the Ave Maria? Fantastic. You see these little pins here? I don't want to solicit this group because you're struggling as it is with your schools. But we sent out mailers all over the country to Catholics, and we asked for a $10 a month pledge, $120 a year. And we have some 8,000 founders. And we've got something like, I think, 1.2 or 1.3 million in on that. And the number of the people is more important than the amount of the dollars because that's a base, that's a grassroots base. And now we're going to establish chapters all over the country, clubs, where these members will meet regularly, and they'll hear more about Ave Maria. And then we know about establishing clubs because we established the Goddess, where we have about 50-some chapters around the country. And we did that over the last 16, 17 years. That was tough. It takes 20 people to have a chartered chapter, but they have to meet some pretty stringent qualifications. They have to be a CEO or head of their company. The company has to be of a certain size. They have to be a practicing Catholic. Their marriage has to be in a good state. We got a member right here. Well, that's tough getting a chapter going because not too many people qualify. And a lot of people that do qualify aren't that interested in doing something Catholic, I'm afraid to say. Well, here, already, we have enough members to have large chapters in every single market of the United States because these 8,000 came from all over the United States. And Legatus, we have about 1,700 or 1,800. We already have 8,000 founding members, and they're still coming in. We're coming in at a tune of about 300, 400, 500 a week. Well, that's going to give us a grassroots alumni that you can't have when you're a brand new school. The reason I mention this is because you might be able to do the same thing with your schools on a smaller scale. Because everybody can afford to give something. Either if it's money or a service, if they like what you're doing. And I think it might make a lot of sense, instead of trying to get somebody to give 10 and 20 and 50,000 all the time, you can beat your brains out doing that. I think it might be just as effective, if not more, to get people to give, say, $5 a month pledge. Now, how many people you know that can afford to give $5 a month pledge? That's $60 a year. You get 100 people like that, you got $6,000 a year. And if you asked each one of them to get another founder every week, think how that will multiply. You might surprise yourself. It might spread like a wildfire. And I think it's important to let these would-be supporters see what you're doing. Bring them to your school. Show them how humble it is. You're talking about humble schools. There was a school here in Ypsilanti called Huron Valley, and we took over responsibility for it about 3 years ago. Now, this school, if you think this building was bad, that was a grade school, too, in a much worse part of town than this. And it was a dump. And had no playground to speak of. What little there was had no grass on it, no parking, really, just a few parking places. And people came from 15, 20 miles around to go to that school. The teachers were grossly underpaid. Everything was, the walls were covered with supplies and everything because there was no room. The place was clean, but it was as humble as a school could be. They had a couple of portables out there that looked like they were on their last days for additional classes. But this school, the year before we got involved, there were four high schools in this area. All four high school valedictorian was a graduate of that school, the Huron Valley School. And what's even more impressive to me is that there's three high school football teams in this area, and all three starting quarterbacks were graduates of this school, and they didn't even have a playground. You wonder? So to me, it told me what you can do with very limited, simple, humble facilities. Now they've got a brand new school. And I think it's good for these people to see something like it, see what you have. Don't be ashamed of it. The humbler it is, the more you want them to see it. What you want to show them is that these kids are neat, they're well-behaved, they're learning the faith, they've got all kinds of religious symbols all over the walls. These people are going to say, well, I'm not very rich, but I can sure help them. And you don't know from amongst these these so-called blue-collar alumni that you have, supporters, you might just get some $5,000 and $10,000 checks. You might get more that way than you do going out and just trying to cherry-pick the people that everybody is going after. You know, and they got their defenses up. Most of the time, you're wasting your time. And a lot of these people have never been asked. And therefore, they've never been thanked. And the greatest thing about asking for money is the opportunity to thank them, because that's what's going to get more. And you can't thank them until they give you something. So you want to look for opportunities to thank people. And then when you thank them very creatively and sincerely. So that's all I'm going to say about development. I'm not an expert on it yet, but I'm going to learn about it. About Ave Maria, we have some pictures here. This picture here does a pretty good job of describing the feel that I was trying to get. My feeling of, and I'm an architectural buff, thing I look for in architecture is two things, and I think it makes up about 90% of exterior architecture. Okay. One is the roofscapes, and I like copper roofs, but I like any roof that's got nice lines, because I think it's a part of architecture that's probably the most prominent, and it's the least considered. And then I like a lot of trees and landscaping. So I call it landscape and roofscapes. And that's what we're trying to do here. You don't have to have the fanciest walls. They're going to be covered with ivy anyhow. And the rest of it would be windows. And here we have covered walkways going on both sides of the green. And there's the oratory, which is the if it's built as planned, and we'll see when the costs come in, it's about 3,500 seats. We found out when we were going into this, building the town and the campus, we were going to build a chapel that seats 350 people. And it was going to be expensive per square foot because I wanted the chapel to be the focal point architecturally and the one gem and one thing on the campus that you really spend some money on. But when I started looking at our enrollment that we were looking for. Right off the bat, we're going to have about 1,000 students here the first year, which would be 2006. And our students are like Steubenville. You know, they go to most of them go to Mass every day. All of them go to Mass on Sunday. Most of the faculty and the staff go to Mass every day. All of them go on Sunday. But we were also building a town, and this was to be the parish for the town. And this was a town that was going to attract serious Catholics from all over the country. And we're getting all kinds of people inquiring about this already. And so this isn't going to be your typical town with 20-25% Catholic, 25% of them go to Mass on Sunday. This is going to be about 90-95% Catholic, 100% of them are going to Mass every Sunday. They're going to have a ton of kids. So we had to build a big church. And Nick Healy wanted to build a real gym that would attract people from all over the world and make the campus famous, be our version of the Golden Dome. It'd be next to that, probably the most important, best-known symbol of any campus in the United States. Well, so we did some research, found out what the largest seating capacity of any Catholic church in the United States is, and I think it was something like 3,200. So we went 35. And we have people coming to conferences all year round, and so... It's going to be a busy church, I believe. In the crypt down below, we'll have a perpetual adoration chapel. The rest of the basement, you don't do basements down there, but we're raising this. We'll have a crypt for burial crypts, so, and we hope to make a lot of money on that. The Los Angeles Cathedral already took in over $10 million for that. We don't expect to do as much as them, but we expect to do a lot. And we did a survey, and we do a survey twice a year because I want to see how much our public relations efforts and our advertising is doing, and with only Catholics only. And we found that about 16% of all the Catholics in the United States have heard of Ave Maria, either the law school or the college. I mean, that is amazing. Steubenville is 21%, and they've been in business a long time. Barry University, which has about 7,000 students, it'll be our biggest competition of Catholic schools in Florida. It's Adrian Dominicans. I don't know if you call that competition or not. But they were 8.5% recognition around the United States. They're pretty much a regional school. Notre Dame was close to 100. Georgetown and Boston College were about mid-80s, and then it dropped pretty dramatically. And unless you had a big basketball team, you were pretty obscure. We found that Ave Maria was already better known amongst Catholics than about two-thirds of the Catholic colleges and universities in the United States. And I think that's important because they have to know we're there, both to raise money and to attract students. So and I'm probably going to be spending most of the rest of my life raising money for Ave Maria. And one of the things I should probably do is try to raise money for a special scholarship for graduates of NAPSA schools. You like that idea? Because you're producing the kind of students that we want, the kind of students that are going to make a change in this war that we have out there. And I commend you because You're my heroes, and it's a privilege to be here, and I'm sorry I talk so long.
Thank you very much, Tom. I just want to let all of you know that the longer I listen to Tom, everything he says rings true. You remember he said he was an expert on demographics, and he really looks at these books all the time. And he said, we think we can draw in Florida from all over the United States. I think I'm correct on this, Tom, but out of the 60 or so students we already have enrolled in Florida, they represent 23 different states. It's some amazing statistic like that. And, you know, I hear Tom say things, and I think, could that really be right? Well, if you sit back, it's really right. And I'm always impressed with his kind of analysis and so forth that goes through.